And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. We're going to have some fun here on the eve of the Open Championship, fourth major of the year. If you didn't catch our Best Bets podcast on Tuesday with Keith Stewart, you need to go check that out. I took a few weeks off. I needed it. You know, it's that time of year. You get into July and you get a little gassed. You know, I got a little burnt out on professional golf, everything that's happening. I can only imagine the players that are living it every single week. I can only imagine, really, just in general, these men and women that travel the professional tour. I just have so much respect for them and the coaches that are out there with them. I mean, the grind, 25 to 30 weeks on the road, different states, different sides of the country. Now they go across the pond into Europe. A lot of these players, you know, they travel worldwide. And we see that, of course, more so on the LIV Tour. So I just got a lot of respect for them. And I can only imagine there's times where they hit the wall and they get a little burnt out, especially with everything that's happening off the golf course. So for me, I had to go recharge the batteries, went up to the Pacific Northwest, saw some good friends, family, some good weather, and now I'm back here in Florida. I feel good, back in the studio, and I've got a full lesson book ahead. Got some good stuff coming up. We are going to fire the engines back up. I kind of went a little softer on the podcast front there through the spring, early summer, as I was really just finalizing this studio, the new website. Go check it out, travisfultongolf.com. Everything's up to date now. You know, I think the studio kind of passed the website, so I need to get all of that in sync. So we're in a really good spot there. And now, you know, back to, I think, all systems go content creation, which was, you know, something that that I was having a lot of success with, really. You know, the podcast was growing and my social platforms. And so I'm excited now as we finish up July, we get into August, we've got the PGA Tour FedEx Cup playoffs, we got the Olympics, we've got the President's Cup, which is going to be awesome. So we've got some good content around that on Tuesdays, and then we're going to be really bringing back now a lot of the top coaches and even some players for a second podcast per week. So you can expect two podcasts per week. Going to have some fun today looking at last week's winners. And I want to share some stuff with you on Robert McIntyre. Bobby Mack back in the winner's circle, his second win of the year. What a season for Robert McIntyre. He wins the Canadian Open with his dad on the bag. And then he goes to the Scottish Open, his own national championship, gets a great break on 16, makes eagle, and he wins again. I love Robert McIntyre. We need more guys like Robert McIntyre, you know, that have that personality and they're not afraid to show it. Hopefully he shows up to the Open Championship this week. He'll probably be there on Wednesday. I'm sure he's on a bit of a bender. Awesome to see Harry Hall get in the winner's circle. I've known Harry for a little bit. I'll show you a picture here. This was me and Harry. We did a piece in Vegas. He went to the University of Las Vegas. And this was last year at the tournament there in Las Vegas. TPC Summerlin. And I did a piece with him for The Cut on Golf Channel, which I don't do anymore. But we did that for about 2 years, and it was a cool little piece. And Harry is a soft-spoken guy. And I've actually got a connection to him, Tom Murtaugh, who is another player from England who works for me here, someone I've taught. He's an excellent player. Go follow him, Tom Murtaugh. And Tommy caddies for Harry from time to time, and he also helps him with some aim point. Tommy's a good young teacher, you know, on the up, coming up, and he's helped him with some aim point stuff. So he's out there from time to time caddying and helping Harry. So Harry getting into the winner's circle for the first time, the opposite field event of the Scottish Open, was very cool. I was really happy for Harry Hall. He was actually in town at the end of last year. He was going to come in and kind of sit in here on the podcast. We didn't make it work, but we'll get Harry on. He's kind of a soft-spoken guy, but he's funny. He's got some incredible one-liners. So congratulations to Harry. I was really happy to see that. We're going to look at Bobby Mack's swing. We're going to look at Sergio Garcia. Yeah, we're going to pay off Liv. He won there in Spain, which was, you know, cool. I mean, you know, anytime you can win in your home country, like Bobby Mack did and like Sergio did. And of course, they win the soccer over there in Europe. I'm not a big soccer fan, but I'm sure that was huge for Spain. Sergio win and live. The Fireballs, this team from Spain, they win. And then Spain wins the soccer event. So huge day for Spain. We're going to look at Sergio. I'm going to show you some stuff in his swing that I like and that I think might register with a lot of you. But we're going to kick it off. And we're also going to look at Ernie Els, by the way, who won his first senior major. We're going to look at Ernie Els' swing. I'm going to share some stuff with you there. But we're going to kick it off with this guy. And for those watching, thank you, YouTube. Please like, leave a comment, all those things, you know, that help. Subscribe, get the like button, leave us a comment, all those things, right? So here is Henrik Stenson. For those listening, I'm going to articulate what I'm looking at. Man, I go back to 2016, and I'm bringing up Henrik here because Henrik, of course, won at Royal Troon back in 2016, and that's where the Open Championship is being played. And you go back to 2016, and it was Henrik and it was Phil Mickelson down the stretch. They really separated because they were in that little window of that they got the best part of the weather, which happens over there at the Open Championship. And it was really bad weather, and their little window was not as bad. So they kind of separated themselves. But you go back to Henrik. Henrik was really one of my favorite swings when I got into the instruction business. And not that, you know, Henrik is like done playing golf. Obviously he went to LIV, but you know, we don't see Henrik as much. He's not that competitive on LIV. He's not on the PGA Tour anymore, but Henrik was a flusher of the golf ball. And I'm going to play a swing here, work with Pete Cowan. I've talked to Pete about Henrik's swing. And the first thing that really jumps out to me when you look at Henrik's swing is this little trace in the pelvis. Watch the belt buckle. His belt buckle would move kind of diagonally towards his right heel. See that right there? Those watching, it's like the club doesn't move, but right there you can see the pelvis moved a bit lateral and diagonal towards that right heel. A little early pressure shift into the right side. I like that in general. Now, I'm not going to show that probably to everybody, but many times with the player, for those that kind of spin off the shaft or spin off the post, I should say, where the right hip gets working too much towards the right heel and they kind of hang left, I'll oftentimes use Henrik as an example, showing them that little pressure shift early to the right side and then turning. So it's like an early shift, then turn. And he did it in spades. And oftentimes I'll bring that up and people are like, oh yeah, I remember that. You know, that little waggle, right? He would kind of move into his right and then he would let that right hip kind of turn and climb. And Pete Cowan, I think was one of the first teachers that really, I think, kind of articulated very well, like this spiraling effect where you get that early pressure shift and then you get the sense that the right knee is losing a little flexion where the right knee gets higher than the left knee. The right hip gets higher than the left hip. The right shoulder's higher than, and you're kind of spiraling up. And I remember having this conversation with Pete Cowan when I was the director of instruction at TPC Sawgrass, and they were in town for the Players Championship. And Pete came over, and I was sitting there, and this was a long time ago. I can't remember the year, but exact year, probably 2000 and maybe 2009, somewhere in there. And so you can imagine you go back 15 years and, you know, kind of working with Henrik in his heyday and all that. And Pete's worked with so many players. And it's not just full swing. I mean, Pete's very good in the short game and all that. But I can remember talking to him and he was demonstrating right in front of the academy this spiraling effect. And man, like, you know, in my mind, I can remember at that moment, like, you know, I kind of, you know, you kind of evolve as a teacher. Right. And I think when I first got into the business, the narrative was around turning the upper and maybe not so much of the lower. And there wasn't a lot of discussion about the tilt of the pelvis. And so this narrative of the right side of the pelvis a little higher, losing a little flexion in the trail, I think was kind of a learning curve for a lot. And I can remember, like, you know, early on starting to kind of, you know, learn a lot of that and say, no, man, the right knee's got to give a little flexion. you got to give up a little flexion. Right side's got to climb. And then having that conversation with Pete and having him describe it and use Hendrick as a bit of an example was really cool. And so the spiraling effect, I'll use the word elongating up. And then from there, it was like he would, you know, kind of fall left and then he would just turn and smash down into it. And the second thing that always kind of jumped out to me with Hendrick's swing was the concept of like sustaining the down, like keeping his arms long and pointing down. Now the club head, of course, would swing up and the body is pushing up. You can see the left leg is pushing up. The spine's extending up. The body is getting out of the way. You know, it's falling left and pushing up. But the idea of the arms and the club lengthening out down, right? Like you can imagine like the concept of sustaining the down with the arms and the club. Like if I try to keep my arms and the club pointing down to the ground, well, I feel like I'm sustaining the down. Now the club head eventually is going to swing up, but I'm not trying to manufacture the up, if that makes sense. And so for Hendrick, to me, it was this beautiful early pressure shift, this climbing of the right side, and then this fall left and sustaining the down. Not sustaining the down with the body, but with the arms and the club head and just really compressing it and smashing it. And to me, in spades and in essence, that was Hendrick Stenson. And that conversation with Pete really kind of spun off into a lot of things. You know, he gave me his number and we stayed in touch and he's come on the podcast a couple of times. We'll get him back on. He's so fascinating. Pete Cowan, you know, to me, one of the all-time greats. Let's go to another older guy. Sergio Garcia. Live Golf, he wins first time. You know, like Sergio is like one of those players, like man to man, you want to like him, right? Like I want to wrap my arms around Sergio. I can remember like when he would come to Ponte Vedra Beach and he would play in the Players Championship, which he's had so much success at. I mean, when he won the Players, it was nuts. Those shots that he was hitting on 17, I think it was like two or three times he was right of the pin on 17 in between the pin and the water. I mean, he just talk about compression, talk about squeezing it at the bottom, you know, shaft lean. Sergio Garcia in spades. And then Sergio does, you know, his things. He has his, I don't know, immature moments. I guess we all have those. And so you kind of keep Sergio at an arm's length this time. But I always enjoy watching Sergio Garcia play, primarily due to his ball striking, primarily due to, you know, kind of this unique shape to a swing. So I'm going to play it here. And this swing is a bit older, but I just love this swing and that club. I mean, you look at that, and this camera angle is not perfect. I get that. And so, it's aiming a little more left than the camera. But you look at this, and, it pays it off. I mean, Sergio, I think at times would get the club pointing a little left at the top. I mean, there's certain swings and times in his career where I think he had the shaft a little bit more down the line. I think there's times where you look at a swing and then it would actually be a little laid off at the top. But the one thing that Sergio didn't do, even if he got it pointing a little, maybe too left at the top, let's say, is he didn't pull down on it. Because so often, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, so often that if you get the shaft, you know, pointing too far to the left, then it's easy to pull down where the shaft wants to start pitching towards vertical and the club can get heavy and that can get problematic. But with Sergio, he always kind of left it alone. Like he kind of left the hands up there and then he just kind of left it alone. And as he started down, that club head would even pitch back more. I mean, look at that picture for crying out loud. I mean, that's insane. That's like Ben Hogan-esque right there. See how that club head, his hands are above the shoulder. This is we're starting our way down now, by the way. His hands are still up above his shoulder, and the club head is pitched back behind him even more. I can remember doing a thing for Golf Channel we're going way back here. And we did this piece on Morning Drive. I think we did it for Golf Central too. And we were picking out certain areas of the swing that would relate to Ben Hogan. And as we got to the top of the swing, from the top to early transition, that's what you would see with Hogan. His hands would stay up there, and the club head would pitch back. The shaft would pitch back even more, like instantly. Charlie Hoffman was the example that I used, but you could certainly use Sergio right here. So he would leave it alone, right? And he would just kind of leave it back there. And then he would, what I would consider, kind of turning into the left arm. I mean, look at that picture. That's unbelievable. He's turning into his left arm, right? Imagine your left arm, and I'm going to point it out in front of me. And then I'm going to make a little backswing where the left arm is going across my chest. Now I'm going to hold my left arm right there. I'm going to hold it with my right hand against my chest, and I'm going to start my way down. But I feel my left arm pressing that smash against my chest. I'm turning into my left arm. So he would turn into that left arm. His hands would kind of, you know, almost get the feeling perhaps of staying up, and then the shaft would pitch back. And then from there, he would just, of course, turn the gas on. I mean, just high-level stuff, folks. I mean, really, really high-level stuff right there. Now, one of the things I want to pass along with Sergio, and I think this will register with a lot of people, I'm going to bring in this split view. And I have a picture of Sergio at address, and I have a picture of Sergio at impact right underneath him. The one thing that I've just loved about Sergio, and you'll see this with a lot of players, is you'll see that shaft at impact return pretty close to where it started. Most players, you're going to see the hands elevate just a little bit. But I think generally speaking, you don't want a lot of, you know, kind of raising the shaft. Like, you don't want that handle to be super high at impact relative to where it was at address. As you start getting that handle higher at impact and you get that bigger dispersion or bigger plane shift, if you will, then you can really start getting that path out to the right. It's easy to hit a lot of big blocks, and it's easy to hit a lot of flip over hooks. And when you look at Sergio, you know, and you look at another example, you know, Nick Faldo was great at this, Joaquin Niemann, you look at these guys that really kind of cover it, that handle right there at impact, man, it's pretty darn close to where it started, isn't it? There's not a lot of handle raise there. So that move and transition that I talked about, and then really being able to turn and get the handle back down underneath him and working back around the corner to the left, to me, is just a phenomenal component in the swing that I think can really help kind of neutralize the path. I think it can kind of help neutralize what the face is going to do. And things really tend to be really synced up with the body as the torso continues to turn and the club continues to exit back around the corner to the left. So if we bring the full swing back in, you will see right there that club, I mean, it just turns the corner. So often I'll work on that, you know, with players is, you know, if things are pretty well organized going back and they get the club in a reasonable position coming down and, you know, and they start getting the impact, but they're still getting some of that handle up high, you know, I'll get in there and start giving them that spatial awareness. And the body will accommodate that. And as they do that, boy, things really start to tighten up. Things really start to tighten up as far as a path face relationship. Even some shaft lean, you know, all those things. So for me, Sergio, those are some of the things that I think really stand out. Let's go to Ernie Els. You know, Ernie Els, to me, you want to talk about a very different golf swing. I mean, Ernie Els has always been probably a little more of an upright type of swing. Ernie Els has always been a swing that would rotate the face a little bit more. Ernie Els, I think, represents in many ways that swing when I first got into teaching that we saw with a Nick Faldo, even a Nick Price to some degree, even Tiger's early day swing where it was kind of turn the upper, maybe not so much of the lower, you know, keep a little flexion in the right knee. I think, you know, maybe a little more face rotation in general. Late 90s, early 2000s. And when you look at Ernie, you know, I think he's even, you know, I think he's turning his right hip probably a little deeper, and he won on the PGA Tour Champions. I'm trying to stop this swing here, right here. And so you get up to the top, and Ernie, you know, I think as he's always in general rotated the face. I think in his heyday, the club face was a bit more square than this. I've been watching Ernie swing over the last year or two, and it seems to me like the club face kind of rotates and does get a bit open. And I think as you get older, you know, it makes sense, right? Like it would, like, you don't want to get the face maybe as shut as you get older, because as you come down, like you don't really have that ability to turn and get out of the way and stabilize the face. So you might take a little pressure off that face. Go ahead and let the face rotate a bit more open going back, and then let it rotate and close it coming through. I think we saw that to some degree with Tiger, right? Like Tiger in his early days when he was young, he had the face a little shut, had a little more across the line, and then he would just bring it down and just, I mean, just explode and get out of the way. Had some issues with his left knee, went to Hank. I think he rotated the shaft and the face got a little bit, you know, a bit more open. Not this open, but a bit more open. A bit more pointing left. And then as he came down, he didn't feel the need to have to really open up as much. He could maybe be a little softer with the lead side and let the face kind of rotate more down. So like face rotation, how much the face is going to rotate going back, you know, in a lot of ways, and is going to determine what you're going to do coming down and through impact and how you're going to support that. Now, I'll tell you, when you look at this swing, and if I have someone come into this studio and they take it back like that with that much toe hang at the top where the toe is hanging down and the face is open, I mean, you're usually not going to see as good of a downswing as you see from RDLs, right? Where the club comes down on a reasonable plane, he's turning the impact with some shaft lean, and then he rotates the face beautifully to their side. Usually you're going to see some kind of compensation to that. You're going to see them come over the top, right? Where they get the path going more left. You may see them come down on a reasonable plane, but lose shaft lean at impact in order to square the face. So I think club face, again, we know kind of dominates what the ball's going to do, but in many ways, it dominates how you're going to hit the golf ball, how your body is going to accommodate what it needs to do to hit a reasonable shot. And more times than not, when I see the face rotate this open with an amateur, they don't manage it as beautifully as Ernie Els does. And you can say, you can actually, you know, kind of lead it to some of his, just his elegance of his tempo and his rhythm, right? I mean, when you think of Ernie Els, you think of this smooth swing. And I think some of that smooth swing goes with the idea of, you know, kind of rotating the face, right? So like I kind of rotate the face a little bit more open going back. I got to close it coming down. And so I got to be a little bit more rhythmic, maybe perhaps a bit more timing to that you could argue. And so there's the big easy, right? And kind of timing those things up. So kind of fascinating, right? I mean, it really is. Ernie's been there was a time earlier in the year with Ernie, I posted it. His downswing was getting steep. I was like, whoa. I think he's cleaned some of that up. And obviously, he played very well to get his win. So that's the big easy. All right, let's finish up with this. Here's our man, right? Bobby Mack. Speaking of kind of an older kind of throwback type of swing, I think Bobby Mack has a little bit of that. Look at this leg drive. Bobby Mack here. Watch this. Left side climbs up. But then he really drives the legs, like, you know, a bit of a, you know, Johnny Miller-esque, like kind of lateral, really going hard lateral, letting the legs go. And when you do that, you know, you're usually going to take on some early side bend, right? And you'll get the spine to take on some early side bend. So I'll bring in a sequence here, and you can see the top of the swing on the left. And there's a good picture of what I was talking about with Henry. Look at, and of course, Bobby Mack is left-handed. You can see the left side of the pelvis climbing, left hip's higher than the right hip, left knee higher than the right. But then in that second picture, you can see that belt buckle and those legs really driving hard. And if you drew a line from his belt buckle to his chin, you can see there's some maybe early side bend. And that's something that I, and I'm not saying this is wrong. I'm just saying that that is something that I think in kind of some textbook modern type of teaching, 3D analysis, upper center, lower center, getting those to get a little bit more stacked up in early transition. You know, Bobby Mack just kind of drives it, right? And it'd be interesting to see what he works on. Simon Shanks is his coach. I'm going to have him on the podcast at some point. I was DMing with him. But what a season for these guys. A couple wins. But that lower center driving, upper center maybe hanging back a little. And then you can see as he gets down in the impact and that head kind of lays down. And you kind of start getting this little bit of this reverse C type of look. And to me, that's a little bit of a classical type of leg action. But it certainly works with Bobby Mack. I'm fascinated. I'm really fascinated to see what the progression has been with Robert McIntyre over the last 3 or 4 years. You know, what it was versus what it is now in the direction of that. I'm really interested to talk to Simon about that. And my guess is it hasn't changed too much, right? My guess is this is the genius of Bobby Mack, right? This leg drive and this head position, this kind of stronger club face and really kind of just working that and letting that flourish. And flourish, it has. I mean, it has come together in a big way. Now, I think he won the Canadian Open more with his putter. I think he was like positive 11 strokes gained putting in Canada. But I think in the Scottish Open, it was, you know, he had a little more ball striking in there. Positive 3 or 4 with his irons, et cetera. So I love this young man. I just, he's got personality. You get the feeling that it's very authentic. And he just puts it out there. And I'm fascinated to learn a little bit more about the development of this and how it's all transpired and come to fruition. So, all right, a few thoughts there. You know, I like taking time to time, just looking at swings, right? And sharing some thoughts and ideas. And as you kind of look at that and you think to yourself, okay, man, that's interesting with Henrik Stenson in that early pressure shift. I tend to kind of hang left and spin a little off. That's me. That's me spinning out of it a little bit in the backswing. And it's interesting, like that spinning move. I go back to one of my younger days, like turning the upper, not so much my lower, right knee stayed flexed. And you know, for me to kind of generate movement, I felt like, you know, my pelvis had to kind of almost stay level and move a little towards the left foot. But then you get that early pressure shift and you let the right side elongate and get taller and spiral up. And well, that's a different feel. I like that in general for most in general. You think about Sergio Garcia and you think about, okay, my handle's here at impact, but yeah, I feel that high handle at impact. Man, that's me clanking it on the toe. You know, so why is that? Why is that high handle occurring? It could be very much because of what's happening before it. Usually it is. So, you know, oftentimes you just can't go straight to the handle. Sometimes you can, but not. Sometimes you got to do some work before it. You think of Ernie Els, right? And you think of, okay, I'm getting older. Maybe it makes a little more sense for me to rotate the face a bit more, take a little pressure off the face because I'm having a hard time stabilizing the face at impact. I'm getting too many club face pulls. And then you think of, you know, Bobby Mack and you think about, man, I think Bobby Mack is a good example for those, and I would say middle to higher handicaps who don't have enough lateral weight shift, who don't stay behind it, right? That guy that lunges out in front of it, or that guy that just kind of hangs back. And so the idea of differentiating a little bit between lower and upper, which can be a big learning curve for so many, letting the pelvis and the weight move lateral towards a target, but having a little stability in the upper body to stay behind it. I think that is a movement that so many need to learn, and usually it's a middle to higher handicap. All right, good stuff. Open Championship. We'll be back next week. It's the 3M Open, so we'll be back on Tuesday with that. And special guest next week on the podcast as we fire this thing back up. Thanks for listening. See you next week.